Hello, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Federalist Files. On today's show, the NSA admits to unmasking Tucker Carlson. Joe Biden sent government information to his son from his private email while he was vice president. Biden's UN advisor has these weird Chinese Communist Party connections. An American spyware company, more on that later. France told America about the Wuhan lab in 2015. And finally, a proposition that kills economic liberty.
We're moving on in this direction, then we'll start dispersing.
Victoria police have officially lost control of the anti-lockdown movement here in Victoria, outnumbered by thousands here. This is the biggest crowd we've seen in Melbourne to fight these lockdowns to date. Five lockdowns is all it took, I feel. This is the beginning of the end of this tyranny.
Hello, folks. I have a pretty jam-packed show for you today. That is Melbourne, Australia. We reported on them very briefly. They had some sort of lockdown where you were only allowed to leave your house for like an hour a day to shop. You could only go to the gym or only work out an hour a day. I mean, the lockdown that they had there was draconian, and they're finally out on the streets protesting. You said after their fifth lockdown, if you can hear the interaction between the police officers in the very beginning and some of the protesters, one protester said, well, we're going to go wherever we want. There's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. And then he said, piss off. like a true, I guess, European or rather an Australian would say. So I have another clip, just another funny one. It seems like everybody in the entire country knows that Joe Biden is cognitively impaired and declining at a very rapid pace, except for Americans. So I have a Australian newscaster making fun of Joe Biden in his town hall event. Play clip six.
You got the vaccination?
Yeah.
Are you okay? I mean, you seem, no, it works. Or, you know, or the mom and dad, or the neighbor, or when you're go to church, or when you're, I really mean it. There are trusted interlocutors. Think of the people, if your kid wanted to find out whether or not there's a man on the moon or whatever, you know, something, or, you know, whether those aliens are here or not, you know, who are the people they talk to beyond the kids who love talking about it?
What? Man on the moon, something. What the hell has this got to do about anything? This is a town hall meeting. The bloke's unchallenged and he's rambling. Listen to this. He actually tries to explain what the question is and then makes an appalling mess of answering his own question.
And the question is whether or not we should be in a position where you are. Why can't the experts say we know that this virus is, in fact, we know why all the drugs approved are not temporarily approved, but permanently approved.
Right. Oh, for God's sake. This virus is, in fact, it's going to be, we know why all the drugs are temporarily approved, but permanently approved.
When I first saw that video, I needed to watch it a couple times because I just think the perception of other countries, how they look at America, is hilarious. Before, it was always like, Americans are crazy, they're pretty nuts, they're willing to pretty much go out there and do anything. You get the Wild West, you think that everybody's a gun owner, everyone's like a Texan, wears the cowboy hat with the Spurs. And now we just look really soft and feeble and pathetic, and I think other nations are starting to kind of see it. That was Sky News, a Sky News journalist. So, I have this story, the NSA unmasking Tucker Carlson. It was confirmed by the NSA's own review, own circumspective investigation of their own agency. This came out originally in The Record. Two sources that are familiar with the matter told them that the NSA found no evidence of targeting Tucker Carlson directly in an effort to sabotage his show. They also ruled out an incidental collection, which happens whenever someone gets in touch with a foreign intelligence target being monitored by the NSA. However, what they do say happened was that Tucker Carlson's name was unmasked in communications between two third parties. The records reporting establishes the government officials thought it was pertinent to identify the Fox News host by name. It was on the 29th of last month that the NSA made a public statement denying specifically that they ever monitored Tucker Carlson's electronic communications and is planning to leak them in an attempt to take his show off the air. So that was Tucker's allegations, and they decided to, you know, deny those allegations. Now, you have to look at this, and you have to analyze this. Why is it that the NSA decided to come out and say, okay, we were not targeting him, we weren't doing any of these things, but we did unmask him? And it was a conversation because it was communications, folks. This is Freedom of Information Act type stuff. If you had a Freedom of Information Act request for these emails, they would be able to come back with evidence that, yes, the NSA did unmask Tucker Carlson. So that may tell you that they may have actually been looking into him and his information, but it wouldn't be uncovered by a Freedom of Information Act request. Therefore, they didn't disclose that they did look into his emails or what have you. They had to have looked into his emails if Tucker Carlson, the source that he has, is saying, yeah, this is what your emails say. So they were looking into Tucker Carlson. It's just it cannot be confirmed through a Freedom of Information Act request, which is why they're not going to openly admit to looking into his emails or targeting him or what have you. What I really think is, it was what they call this incidental collection. I don't think this is ever incidental, these collections from them. I think they see someone's name and they just start looking through all of their emails as well, even if they don't have a warrant or a probable cause reason to do so. Once they saw it was Tucker Carlson's name, they probably thought, oh, let's look through this guy. I don't know exactly if they want to destroy his career or what have you. I don't think that was really the case. I think that these NSA agents, they have so much power that they just snoop around, and they also have nothing better to probably do. I really think that's simply what it all is. These NSA agents probably looked through all of his information, but it was never communicated over email because they're smart enough to probably know not to communicate something like that over email. That's really what it comes down to, I'm sure. Considering Tucker Carlson already has, from his source thus far, has been 100% correct on point, there's just nothing that will be found from a Freedom of Information Act request that indicts them on incidental collection or targeted collection of his information. Therefore, they're not going to admit to something that they know through a FOIA request is not going to be proven. So they will admit something that they know is going to be proven through a FOIA request, because then that makes them look terrible. So I still am very, very speculative. I mean, it could be, you could consider what I'm saying conjecture, maybe, but I mean, there's a lot of things that kind of rule all of that out, considering Tucker Carlson's person that informed him knew exactly what his emails were saying. So, I mean, that has to completely rule out that there wasn't incidental or targeted collection. Okay, so next, I had this very interesting article from MIT. I'm going to hit that later with some of this COVID stuff as I go over it. So Joe Biden, he used, now this comes out too as well, this is a Just the News piece. I have a lot of, I'm not going to have a lot of video, not much really transpired over this past weekend. A lot more stuff that I've been leaving on the back burner over the past weekend. Some nitty gritty stuff, look deep into Hunter, deep into Joe Biden. And once again, the only reason we're talking about Hunter Biden is because it's relative to Joe Biden and Joe Biden's influence. Otherwise, I don't care what Hunter Biden, if Hunter Biden wants to go do crack on the side of the road, yeah, it's probably not a good idea for him to do so. Yeah, that's the president's son. It kind of looks sad for the president that this is the kid that he raised and he has all these problems. It looks terrible for Hunter, but it's not really related to the governance of Joe Biden. So I will go over things as it relates to Joe Biden, or as it relates to Hunter, if it has something to do with the way in which Joe Biden is governing, or the way in which he's president, or he has taken advantage of his public positions. So Joe Biden, apparently he used his private email, and actually really it's not apparently, because This is a great investigative piece by Just the News. John Solomon writes it. Joe Biden, he used his private email to send government info to Hunter. And you ask, how do you know exactly that this is 100% proven? This also, additionally, freedom of information request. And I have in the link, once again, everything will be provided in the show notes, in the description below. It'll be titled, this specific piece from Just the News, Joe Biden used private email to send government info to Hunter. In the piece, it has individual PDF files that you can click on and you can pull up the freedom of information request, the findings showing these emails between Hunter and Joe Biden. So messages sometimes signed dad from the email account robinware456@gmail.com were found on a Hunter Biden seized laptop by the FBI in December 2019 from a Delaware computer shop owner. Some of the messages from the vice president to his son obtained by Just the News were deeply personal. Others were political in nature, and still others clearly addressed business matters, often forwarding information coming from senior officials in the White House, the State Department, and other government agencies. So what we had is Joe Biden had a personal email. It was called robinware456@gmail.com, and he was emailing Hunter Biden constantly. And all of this information was found on Hunter Biden's laptop that the FBI seized in 2019 in that Delaware computer shop because, you know, Hunter was so cracked out of his mind that he didn't know that he left it at this computer shop. So for instance, and there's a couple different scenarios, and this was while Joe Biden was the vice president under Obama. So, for instance, in late November 2014, the U.S. Embassy in Istanbul sent an email to the State Department that was then forwarded to senior advisors to Joe Biden, including national security expert Michael Carpenter, providing an early alert that an American named Martin O'Connor was about to be released from detention in Turkey. Okay. So this is a national security threat if information like this gets out, I would imagine, considering it's the national security expert getting the email or getting it forward to them, okay, that this American is about to be released from Turkish detention. So what Joe Biden ends up doing is he ends up forwarding it to his own son, who has nothing to do with the government. He's not in a government position. Okay, so State Department officials forwarded the information to the vice president's office, where Biden aide Colin Cowell, and this Biden aide is now the President Joe Biden's undersecretary of defense for policy. So all these people are still, what you'll notice is all these same players are still somehow in the government working for Joe Biden. They're part of the big government establishment apparatus. So he sent it to Joe Biden's, this guy Colin Cowell, working under Joe Biden, sent it to Joe Biden's private email instead of his government email. Okay, the vice president then sent it to his son, Hunter Biden, with the subject line, forward, Mr. O'Connor being released from detention today. So he's telling him national security information from a private email to begin with. The fact that it's even being sent to a private email is kind of a problem, right? And then there's also information saying in U.S. code that every single email going out of the White House, it all has to be recorded, everything. That's part of like the freedom of information like system. A former senior Obama administration official confirmed to Just the News that some administration officials knew about this private email, robinware456@gmail.com, and it was used from time to time. So this is what the informant said, and I quote, "I saw it used to communicate with his family and friends or to pass information to them." The official told Just the News, speaking only on condition of anonymity because of fear of reprisal. Yeah, fear of being Clintoned, really, essentially. So the emails obtained by Just the News show numerous Obama administration officials communicating or were aware of the private email address or had their information sent to it, including current Secretary of State Tony Blinken. In January 2013, Blinken emailed Joe Biden at his private email recounting a colleague's conversation about the Pulitzer-winning journalist, author, and screenwriter Richard Ben Kramer's last minutes before dying. At the time, Blinken was Joe Biden's national security advisor. So they kind of talk about this guy dying. It's not really worth, it's not notable. But the point is, a lot of people in the government apparatus knew that Joe Biden was using his private email for things when he probably shouldn't have been doing so. Beyond establishing that Joe Biden sent government information to his son, the existence of the private email address also raises questions of federal law. As Hillary Clinton's email server showed, Biden had an obligation to preserve any emails involving his government work under federal records law, even if he used a private email address. So yes, he should have been saving everything that he did with that private email address, sending everything to his son or what have you, and that's nothing that was done, obviously. It was only really found accidentally by the seizure of his son's laptop. So it goes on. On another occasion in June 2014, Hunter Biden suggested, and this one's huge to me, this one's insane that this happened. Hunter Biden suggested someone he wanted to see appointed as a detailee to the Treasury Department. And this is what he wrote to his father, and I quote in an email, "Before you fill the position, please talk to me." And then he responded, Joe Biden, and he stated, "Call me right away, comma, dad." Politics, including the potential for Biden to run for office in 2016, were sometimes the subject of emails coming to and from robinware456@gmail.com account. So yes, his son was pushing influence in the government, telling him who to and who to not appoint to positions within the executive department, within the executive branch of our government. You had his son telling him, telling the vice president who to appoint to positions. This is a serious problem. And he did it on private email. Why did he do it on private email? Because he knew he could get away with doing it that way instead of doing it on a government email where everything would be extremely public or much more scrutinized. So former U.S. Senator Ted Kaufman, who succeeded Biden as a Delaware senator after serving decades as his chief of staff, sent an email November 3rd, 2014 that included a Wall Street Journal article that was negative to Hillary Clinton, a potential 2016 challenger to Biden before the vice president declined to run that year. The article was titled, and I'm quoting, "Hillary Clinton's Wall Street Problem," end quote. And Kaufman wrote in the email, and I'm quoting, "In case you missed it," end quote. So he wrote that to Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and Joe Biden's late son, Beau Biden. The subject line read, "Excellent." So yes, they were planning on running against Clinton in this case, and they were trying to dig up dirt on Clinton so they can beat her politically, which is not really a surprising thing. It's just a point that everyone knew about him using his private email for government work, just as Hillary Clinton. He really just, all he did was he pulled a Hillary Clinton, and he kind of got away with it. It seems like the standard for politician in this country, and I'm not surprised by this, of course, it just keeps getting lower and lower. You had Bill Clinton cheating on his wife at one time. And I mean, even Trump, like as the president now, he had multiple affairs, not in office, but he had multiple affairs. The guy's on his third wife. And years ago, that would be like a huge problem for the president of the United States. And this is me just being, honest, I don't know, being critical. Like, that was a problem years ago, but now it's not a problem. I mean, also, Bill Clinton did do it while he was in office with, like, his secretary, which is a pretty big deal. But it's just, it seems like the bar just gets lower and lower and lower. And now this isn't a big deal that Joe Biden was, you know, emailing information about the government to his son on his private email. And his son even was kind of making some sort of executive policy by talking to Joe Biden about who he was appointing in the executive branch of our government. So I have another article about Hunter Biden and how he may be pushing influence in China. It's Hunter Biden's weird Chinese art ties that he has here, which is, I mean, if that's the way that I could put it, it's definitely weird for sure. I had the article up. I'm trying to pull it up now. I had the specific snippets that I plan to present, but I don't know what happened to them. Let's see if I can find it here. Okay, so all right. So Joe Biden's son, he's going to be dealing art in China, apparently. This is like a huge, weird story. It doesn't really make any sense. This guy has a lot of ties to the Chinese government, the guy that's supposed to be his agent, quote unquote. So the art dealer representing the president's son has longstanding ties to China and said in 2015 that he wanted to be the art world's, and I'm quoting, lead guy in China, end quote. His name is George Burgess, who is representing Hunter Biden as he ventures into the art world, has talked about his business dealings in China in the past, but his reported ties could pose an ethics issue as he sells Biden's art to anonymous buyers. Of course, it's anonymous buyers. That doesn't surprise me, which makes it even easier to be nefarious with your actions. So a representative for Burgess previously told Fox News that the sales of Biden's art will be kept confidential, which is even worse. You want that all out in the open. You want to know what it is he's selling, who he's selling it to, how much money it's going for, and then what type of legislative acts, what type of executive orders pass from there on out, or what type of executive actions are taken after that. The White House has said they have an ethics plan in place to ensure the president's son doesn't know who buyers are, though Hunter has raised eyebrows with plans to attend art shows where potential buyers will be in attendance. So yes, I mean, the liberal media is just so dishonest. They're not critical of the regime ever when it's a Democrat. I mean, I saw it during the Obama administration. Now we're seeing it during the Biden administration. This is just a weird story. It doesn't really, to me, you think Hunter Biden is such a good artist that people are actually willing to pay. In a general sense, no one's really even willing to pay money for good art nowadays to begin with. So do you think that people are really willing to throw big money? But really, all it is lobbying in the guy. It's just lobbying. It's bribes that are going to be taken by Hunter Biden. And then maybe he can whisper in his dad's ear and his daddy's going to do something for him or do something for the Chi-Coms, the Chinese Communist Party. And the problem with this is Burgess has some really serious ties to China. And the anonymity of the buyers could pose a potential ethics problem, especially with the younger Biden's prodigal relationship with President Biden. Anonymous buyers could have ties to the Chinese Communist Party and could attempt to buy influence in the Biden administration through art purchases. So I'll tell you what the biggest problem here is, and I'll find it specifically from the article, because I was reading why it's like really a problem, because the ties are much deeper than people think it is with this Burgess guy. He said many things about China. So this is specifically what he said, all these different things about. Well, he was charged with assault with a deadly weapon, whatever. He also was quoted in a state-run newspaper called China Daily, talking about art. He kind of sounds dorky. So what he said is and I'm quoting here, and this is what Burgess said in a 2015 interview, and I'm quoting, "My plan is to be the lead guy in China, the lead collector and art dealer, discovering and nurturing talent from that region. I plan to find and discover and bring to the rest of the world those I consider China's next generation of modern artists." Which, by the way, art doesn't really happen in regimes like that, in communist regimes, because there's no time for innovation. There's no time to, because when you're working all day and getting paid no money, there's no time to paint art. China's economy is transforming. The global economy and everything is changing because of a rising China. Cultural power is real power. That is the reason America continues to be the capital of the world, because of its influence on culture for generations and on an unrivaled global level. And I think more and more the Chinese are beginning to understand that cultural innovation will power their future cultural influence across continents, which... that's probably the most truthful statement I've seen from him thus far. He's right, yes, the Chi-Coms, they're interested in American culture. Why are they interested so much in American culture? Because they understand that is the most influential part to Americans at large. If they can influence the culture, they can control Americans. It's another way of brainwashing Americans without actually having to attack us, destroying us from within. And that's why the Chi-Coms go for stuff like that. And this is just going to be some sort of weird payoff for Joe Biden and Joe Biden's family. That's what I think it is. We'll see what happens. So Biden's UN advisor, another person that's linked to the Chinese Communist Party, to push preferred policies. The National Pulse wrote this one. It's written by Natalie Winter. So we have this guy named Zach Vertin. He is the ambassador to the UN. He's Biden's ambassador to the UN. He is a senior advisor to President Joe Biden, Oh, he's, I'm sorry. He is a senior advisor to President Joe Biden's ambassador to the United Nations, met with officials from a Chinese Communist Party think tank linked to the regime's United Front Department, an effort that seeks to neutralize opposition to the Chinese Communist Party's preferred policies. So yes, he's meeting with some of these Chinese Communist Party think tanks. They're backed by the CCP. So while serving as an analyst at the International Crisis Group, Virton met with leaders from the Shanghai Institute for International Studies, which is a Chinese Communist Party-run think tank. So the government runs this think tank, okay? The communists run the think tank. And he's meeting with them. And this is someone that's an advisor, a senior advisor to the ambassador of the United Nations. So Tung Chi Hwa sits on the think tank's board while also serving as the vice chairman of the highest ranking entity overseeing China's United Work Front Department, according to the U.S. China Security and Economic Review Commission. The effort aims, and I'm quoting here, and this is the biggest problem, to co-opt and neutralize sources of potential opposition to the policies and authority of its ruling Chinese Communist Party, and influence foreign governments and other actors to take actions or adopt positions supportive of Beijing's preferred policies, end quote. So their specific goal in this entity, in this think tank, is to shut down dissent to the regime, shut down the dissent to the Chinese Communist Party. And we have U.S. senior advisors to ambassadors going and meeting with these people and having some severely deep links with them as well. So in addition to advising the think tank, Tung has repeatedly, and that's the person, Tung has repeatedly attended SIIS, which is this Shanghai Institute for International Studies, events including its 50th anniversary, hosted leaders from there at his events, and even funded some of their research. Oh my God, man. It's so deep. All right, we're going to go on. Tung is also the founding chairman of the China-United States Exchange Foundation, which seeks to, and I'm quoting, effectively disseminate positive messages to the media, key influencers, and opinion leaders, and the general public regarding the Chinese Communist Party. So that's great. They want Americans, because this is the China-United States Exchange Foundation, they want Americans to think good things about the Chinese Communist Party, this think tank. So they're trying to push their influence in America. They want Americans to think, oh, well, communism isn't that bad. The Chinese Communist Party is not that terrible. They don't kill their people. I was just watching a video, and I think it was a documentary from about 10 years ago, and it showed video of them lining up Chinese people and shooting them and killing them, people that dissented to the regime. But it's okay, because the Chinese Communist Party has found a way to infiltrate American politics through using culture, as well as some of these movies, some of these the pop culture references. The National Pulse has previously revealed that the China-United States Exchange Foundation sponsored trips to China for mainstream corporate media outlets in exchange for favorable coverage, a program that the Shanghai Institute for International Studies has repeatedly participated in. So yes, American news outlets are even being paid off by the Chinese Communist Party, so they do not report on the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, this is something, these stories about China and their influence is just outrageous. And the fact that we have American media outlets that just misreport this or don't even report the information it's reprehensible. They are enemies of the Republic. When I say they're enemies of the regime, you see, if you see me on Twitter, if you follow me on Twitter and you see what I say about them, about the media, the American media, they're enemies of the people, as Trump characterized them. He's 100% correct. He's on point with that. And that's why it stuck. That's why him calling them that, his classification of them as enemies of the Republic, enemies of freedom, enemies of liberty, he's correct. And that's why it stuck so well, because it was so true. So, despite the think tank's ties to the Chinese Communist Party's influence operations, Virton, who's that senior advisor, met with the SIIS deputy director and a research fellow, as revealed by the think tank's website. So this is what the problem is. Vertin has a long-standing relationship with his new boss, United Nations Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who also, so our UN ambassador, who is his boss, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, also has ties to the Chinese Communist Party through her former consulting firm and speaking engagements at the Confucius Institute. The Confucius Institutes are the ones that are funding American universities. Confucius Institutes are backed by the Chinese Communist Party in funding. So they have infiltrated our education system. They have infiltrated our pop culture. They're infiltrated our government as well, obviously. What else is left for them to take from us at this point, the Chinese Communists? What else is there for them to influence? And this is a quote from Vertin talking about the ambassador. And I'm quoting, "I first met Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield when she was our lead diplomat in Liberia and was then lucky to work with her during the Obama years when she served as Assistant Secretary of State for Africa. We have stayed in touch since, and she generously invited me to speak to her classes while she was teaching at Georgetown University." So yeah, there's some deep ties to the Chinese Communist Party and our government. None of this, to me, is surprising. There's this very good book. It's called The Enemies from Within. Or The Enemies Within. It's written by Trevor Loudon. I have it here next to me. And it's a couple years old, but it does trace back all the ties of all the American politicians to the Communist Party, and some of them to the Chinese Communist Party as well, and their engagements when they were in college or if they went to go speak at some sort of communist committee or what have you. Kind of like how there's Turning Point USA. It's the same thing, but it's for the commies. So while all this is going on, we continue to talk about the January 6th commission. I have a reporter asking Jen Psaki a question about it, and she goes on to explain how it's a bipartisan commission. Play clip 7.
I have a question on tomorrow.
Sure.
January 6th Select Committee.
Yeah.
First meeting takes place tomorrow. Here it takes place tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do you know if the president plans to watch any of it, and what are his expectations for the next?
Well, I think first the president has called for, as you know, a full and independent investigation into the events of January 6th, and he continues to support Speaker Pelosi's leadership of that work, including her decision to appoint Republican members who are similarly committed to this objective. So in his view, in our view, tomorrow's hearing will be an opportunity to hear firsthand from the men and women in the Capitol Police and the Metropolitan Police Department who bravely protected our Capitol on that day. His goal is the same goal that Speaker Pelosi has, which is to get to the bottom of what happened and prevent it from happening in the future. And he trusts her leadership to do exactly that.
Will he be watching any of the hearings?
Well, as you know, he typically has quite a packed schedule. He does catch news clips. Sometimes all of you are featured in them. And I'm sure he will be kept abreast of the hearings. And the work that's happening on the Hill tomorrow.
So just on the fundamental front of this 9/11 commission, or this, I keep calling it, because the 1/6 commission, because they're making it like it's the next 9, it was the newest 9/11, because they're absurd and they embellish the Democrat Party. You have all Rhino Republican, pretty much not even Rhino. I think somebody called them Pelosi Republicans. I think McCarthy called them that, even though he's another establishment hack himself. So it almost doesn't matter what he has to say, but whatever. So the Republicans that are involved in this, and I keep trying to find it, but from what I've seen Adam Kinzinger, I've seen what's her name as well, Liz Cheney and Mitt Romney. Those are the three that I've seen thus far in this committee. So it's really just Democrats. You just have Democrats in this. It's a bipartisan committee, which is just made up and comprised of Democrats. So the whole thing's stupid. They're going to continue to push this until the next election. They're going to go as long as they can, because this is what will happen with this commission. The Senate has investigatorial powers in terms of how they are to do their job. The stupid commission, which really, investigations of and commissions of the Senate, it's just all grandstanding and political gesturing. It has nothing to do. They're not going to make any type of legislation. So they do have investigatory powers in terms of when it comes to, as it relates to making legislation. In this case, they're not going to make any legislation. They're going to act like they're going to, and they're just going to continue to investigate for the next 3 years until the next election. They're going to attempt to make January 6th into the next 9/11. So France, I have this story about France warning Americans. They warned America about the Wuhan lab in 2015, Daily Caller piece written by Eleanor Bartow. So in 2015, intelligence officials warned, and it's French intelligence officials, warned the U.S. State Department and their own foreign ministry that China was cutting back on agreed collaboration at the lab. A former state official, David Asher, now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute think tank, told the Daily Caller News Foundation. So, the French helped the Wuhan lab, built a lot of their equipment. It was a collaborative deal that they had. And by 2017, the French were kicked out of the lab and cooperation ceased, leading French officials to warn the State Department that they had grave concerns as to Chinese motivations, according to Asher. The State Department alleged in January 2021, at the end of the Trump administration, that the Wuhan lab had engaged in classified research on behalf of the Chinese military since at least 2017. So I remember reading that off to you folks, that they've been pretty much backed by the Chinese military, and they've been messing around with who knows what in their lab. Biological weapons, chemical warfare, we're not exactly sure. So this whole COVID thing continues to loom over us. We've seen a lot of rhetoric coming out of the politicians. They're talking about forced vaccinations. I just saw a story today. The VA, Veterans Affairs, this is a federal employer, they're forcing vaccinations. They're mandating it on their employees. So I don't exactly know what happens as an employee if you decide not to take the vaccine. If anybody knows, maybe you can reach out to me at my email. I'll have it in the description below. It's thefederalistfiles@gmail.com. I don't exactly know what's going to happen with this. Are they going to lay people off because they don't want to get vaccinated? Because I think this can happen. If they make people get vaccines, I think that you can see, if you see a real uprising in the people of the United States, just say, well, I'm not going to do it. What are you going to do if they decide not to get vaccinated, you lay them off, and then they turn around and they collect unemployment? Because we could see a high percentage of people, maybe 10% of Americans, decide not to work at their job anymore because of this. And I just don't know what will happen. I'm very interested. I'm very to speculate upon what can happen from this. The ramifications are the implications from forcing vaccinations through employers, which I think they're going to try to do. They've been trying to do it. They've been talking about it. I think it's going to slowly move in here, and that's why they're making a big deal out of COVID cases right now. I don't really think there's that many. I don't think the numbers even compute or even close to what they were before. So Andrew Cuomo, here's a clip of him talking about forcing vaccinations on people, throwing them in the back of a car. Play clip 10.
And we have to get in those communities, and we have to knock on those doors, and we have to convince people and put them in a car and drive them and get that vaccine in their arm. That is the mission.
So there you go. I mean, he's been honest. He's always been honest. I think at one point he actually had an interview, and he said, this would never have been done if it weren't for the people that are okay and comply with this. And he has a very good point. He's very honest and obvious with what he says. Is if Americans stood up and said, we're not going to take the tyranny, we're not going to take you shutting down businesses, we're not going to take the stupid mask mandates and policies, and we're just going to have a mass noncompliance. And I'm not even talking about a 100% noncompliant. I'm talking like maybe 30% noncompliance, then they wouldn't be able to instill or implement any of these policies that they've done so far. And they wouldn't have been able to take your civil liberties away from you now, to the point where they're going to attempt to push COVID vaccine on your employer, just kind of like they do with healthcare, which is very interesting. It makes it very hard to quit a job or try for upward mobility when they require healthcare to go through your employer, because otherwise then it's too expensive for you to just afford out of pocket. So I have CNN actually talking about this. Once again, it's that same doctor that went on talking about holding the carrot in front of people in terms of vaccination to inspire people. Dr. Leanna Wen, And she's talking about getting vaccinations and having vaccine passports just to be able to walk into your nearby grocery store. Play clip four.
Right, I think it depends on the circumstance. So if you're going to the grocery store and the grocery store doesn't have the capacity to enforce some kind of proof of vaccination, then they have to say that indoor masking needs to apply because we don't know who's vaccinated and who's not. The same thing for schools. Schools, you can't expect the teacher in every school to be asking, well, you're not wearing a mask, so are you vaccinated or not? And so if that's the case, everybody should be wearing masks. But I could imagine there are already concert venues or workplaces that are saying, if you are not vaccinated, you can't come, or you have to get a negative test. And that's what's needed in order to really incentivize vaccines at this point.
We just saw them.
So like I said, forced vaccines through your employer, where you're going to be laid off. You're not going to be allowed to feed your family. You're not going to be allowed to survive and live in polite society, in civil society, unless if you go and get a vaccination because the government said so. This is the next step. This is the next step towards tyranny. Our government is starting to continue to take out plays from the Chinese Communist Party playbook. They know they can enforce their tyrannical policies through private industry, so that's what they want to do because they know it subverts the Constitution. And there's, once again, I've said this before, there's case law that shows that if the government uses private industry as an enforcement wing for policy, it is still unconstitutional. So we're going to see what ends up happening with this. I'm very interested to see what the libertarians, what their position is going to be when private industry forces you all to vaccinate yourselves. And then I want to see them defend private industry and be like, well, it's okay because, you know, it's a private business and they can do whatever they want and they can have whatever rules they want for their employees. I'm very interested to see what ends up happening with that. So here's this MIT study. I thought this was very interesting. Storing vaccination data underneath the skin. It's written by Ann Trafton. I saw Candace Owens tweeted a couple days ago, so I, you know, read it. I thought it was very interesting to know. I don't know exactly how tyrannical a policy like this would be, because in a way it is, but then as well in another way it kind of isn't. But I think if the government had it in their hands, I think it would be extremely tyrannical. Really, what you would do is you would create an on-patient decentralized medical record. The researchers developed a new type of copper-based quantum dots which emit light in the rear infrared spectrum. The data are only about 4 nanometers in diameter, but they are encapsulated in biocompatible microparticles that form spheres about 20 microns in diameter. This encapsulation allows the dye to remain in place under the skin after being injected. Okay, so this sounds super confusing and you don't understand what I'm talking about right now. The MIT studied this. They call it a decentralized medical record. So you wouldn't actually have your medical records on any type of centralized system, so they would never be exposed to any type of hacker. You would have it on your person. You would have it in your arm. This micro needle, a very small needle, would be pushed into your arm. They would inject you with a dye that would remain in place, a very small amount of dye, and then you would need a special device to be able to read your medical records for immunizations, what you have been injected with and what you haven't been injected with, things like rubella, measles, mumps, whatever, what have you. Now, in one way, if this was utilized the way it was supposed to be, this wouldn't be a terrible idea. I also don't think that this obviously should be a voluntary system. If you want to do it, you do it. If you don't want to do it, just like everything else should be in terms of these vaccinations. So the researchers designed their dye to be delivered by a microneedle patch rather than a traditional syringe and needle. Such patches are now being developed to deliver vaccines for measles, rubella, and other diseases, and the researchers showed that their dye could be easily incorporated into these patches. So what you would do is you would get this patch. This patch would give you the immunization. This is a new type of technology. And in this patch would have a dye. It would stay like in your arm. And it would only stay for so many years because it would eventually die out. No pun intended. And then after it died out, let's say when you take a rubella vaccination, usually the vaccine's good for, let's say, 10 years. The dye would die out in 10 years. Then you would know you'd have to go for another one. So whenever you went to the doctor, they would use this special infrared light or whatever type of, I don't know exactly what it's called, the light. to shine in and see if you've had if you're up to date with your immunizations, which I think it's kind of interesting in a way. It's a good thing if it's decentralized, it's not on a system, but at the same time, once again, this is all up to you, the individual. That's the way I view it. You know, the tyrants like the idea of implementing and instilling these policies on people and forcing it down their throat. So, the microneedles used in this study are made from a mixture of dissolvable sugar and polymer called PVA, as well as the quantum dot dye in the vaccine. So, it's made of sugar and polymer. When the patch is applied to the skin, the microneedles, which are 1.5 millimeters long, which is very small, partially dissolve, releasing their payload within about 2 minutes. By selectively loading microparticles into microneedles, the patches deliver a pattern in the skin that is invisible to the naked eye, but can be scanned with a smartphone that has the infrared filter removed. The patch can be customized to imprint different patterns that correspond to the type of vaccine delivered. So it's very, I thought it was interesting just to read off. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, bad thing. I think the government would do whatever they can to register you on more things in terms of vaccinations. They want a centralized database because they want all your information. So I don't think it's a good thing in that regard. But if it was a shot that was the idea of you get this shot and in this shot you get some sort of like ink that can only be seen through an infrared light, I think it would kind of be a good idea if the government wasn't able to actually, because if this is actually decentralized and the government doesn't know when you got your vaccinations, the government doesn't know if you got your vaccinations, but this can easily be used as like a COVID passport. As soon as you walk into places, they shine a light on your arm and they're like, well, you can't come in here. So that's why I don't really like the idea of it. But it is interesting to kind of know what maybe they're trying to implement next. But in the study, I think MIT was trying to like solve an actual problem and trying to do it in a very free manner in a good way, and then ended up anything like that is always going to be commandeered by the government for tyranny. So spyware that runs even deeper than Pegasus. I have this other story. It's from the Epoch Times, written by Ken Silva. Just very short story. You have a private security firm in the United States, very similar to this NSO operation with that Pegasus software that I talked about the other day. The company's called Clearview AI. It has received notoriety over the past year after the New York Times reported that the company was scraping billions of photos to develop facial recognition software for law enforcement organizations at home and abroad. It was also revealed last year that the Department of Homeland Security and other agencies had been purchasing data in bulk from private corporations. Legal scholars have raised concerns that surveillance companies pose a particularly onerous threat to privacy in the United States because the Fourth Amendment restrictions on surveillance don't apply to private companies. So once again, I mean, this is amazing. The U.S. government will find every single aspect to gain more power through the private industry. That's all that they've been doing this entire time. And you have private corporations that are willing to do so because they're getting huge payouts from taxpayer dollars. We are paying for our government to spy on us through private industry. It is amazing. So you had the ACLU came out. They stated, and I quote, "If law enforcement agencies can buy their way around the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement, the landmark protection announced by the Supreme Court in Carpenter will be in peril. Despite federal agencies spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on access to cell phone location databases, those agencies have not publicly explained their legal justifications or internal limitations on access to this invasive information," end quote. So they're right. ACLU, I'm not going to, most of the time, really don't have much to agree on, but in this case, they're 100% correct. They're using private industry to subvert the Constitution, which they've been doing on a lot of multiple fronts. It seems like no one's realizing it. I don't even think the conservatives, or I know the Republicans definitely don't realize it because they're imbeciles, but I don't even think the conservatives are really talking about that this that much. So you got Senator Ron Wyden, surprisingly, the guy that defends big tech till the death, and Rand Paul. They introduced legislation in April intended to address some of the constitutional issues presented by emerging surveillance technologies. And it's called the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act. It would place a warrant requirement on government purchases of bulk data and would take away the U.S. Attorney General's ability to give civil immunity to companies that unlawfully sell bulk data to government agencies. The fact that the Attorney General can even give immunity, civil immunity to companies that just hand over our data to the government is a problem as well. I can't even believe that that's a thing. I mean, it's just, man, it gets more and more depressing the more and more you read. So, very last article I have, and I think this one's extremely interesting. This has to do with the New York Times comes out and they endorsed federal government-backed crypto, the Fed, the Federal Reserve backing cryptocurrency. It's written by Mediaite, this article here, and the title is New York Times op-ed endorses Fed-backed cryptocurrency with incentive for people to spend by shrinking balances if they refuse. So it's very confusing. What exactly are we referring to? This one's written by Rudy Tekala. So yes, the government has been trying to start up a virtual currency. And you go, oh, well, what is wrong? Because people like Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin's cool. What's wrong with the government having a virtual currency? This is what the problem is. They can use it to influence your spending habits, your spending practices. They can shrink your balances if we have negative inflation rates, if they want to, because this is going to be a Fed-backed cryptocurrency. They can completely manipulate it. If you have your money sitting in the bank right now, the only way they can manipulate it is print more and more money, then they can devalue it and debase it that way. But they still cannot say you have to take your money out of the bank and you have to go spend it. In this case, they're going to create incentives so you have to spend your money or else by a certain date, you lose all of it. And we have a Cornell University professor on the New York Times. He's the one in the article, he's the one that writes it, supporting this system because he is a central planner. If you notice all these Ivy League elitist school, academia, they all seem to be the same. They're really smart people that are stupid. They think that they're so smart, they're so elitist, that they have a power, and because they have a degree, they should be telling you how to run your life and how to spend your money. So, this author, a Cornell University professor, took to the pages of New York Times on Thursday to call for a government-backed digital currency capable of, and this is considered a CBDC, they call it central bank digital currency, imposing an incentive to make Americans spend faster. So his name is Eswar Prasar. So he stated in a quote, to keep their money relevant, many central banks are experimenting with digital versions of their currencies. These currencies are virtual, like Bitcoin, but unlike Bitcoin, which is a private enterprise, they're issued by the state and function much like traditional currencies. So Prasar, he argued that the United States Federal Reserve should follow countries including China, Japan, and Sweden in working to establish a centralized cryptocurrency, saying it could be, and I'm quoting here, a lost opportunity. This is all centralized planning. The lost opportunity would be the government in taking power from you. That's what he's referring to. The benefits of digital currency, Prasar said, included allowing the government to monitor how it was spent and enabling the Federal Reserve to stimulate spending. So this is what he has to say, and I quote, he wrote, typically, if the Federal Reserve wants to stimulate consumption and investment, it can cut interest rates and make cheap credit available. But if the economy is cratering and the Fed has already cut the short-term interest rate it controls to nearly zero, its options are limited. If cash were replaced with a digital dollar, however, the Fed could impose a negative interest rate by gradually shrinking the electronic balance in everyone's digital currency amounts, creating an incentive for consumers to spend and for companies to invest. So they want to shrink your account to pump the economy. If they hit you with a negative interest rate, right? Then you go, okay, well, my money's useless sitting here anyway because I'm getting hit with negative interest. They're taking my money away, so I might as well go and spend it. That's their way to stimulate the economy, quote unquote. And it's also a way to make you poor for the rest of your life and have no savings. So with respect to tracking transactions, he added, and I'm quoting, a digital dollar would bring off the books economic activity out of the shadows and into the formal economy, increasing tax revenues. Small businesses would benefit from lower transaction costs since people would use credit cards less often and they would avoid the hassles of handling cash, end quote. So yes, with Bitcoin, it is an open ledger, meaning accounts are all open. Everybody knows this Bitcoin's moving from here to here. But nobody knows who's behind those specific addresses that are holding those Bitcoin in account. You just know that the Bitcoin's going from one place to another. So it is open, it's transparent, but there is still some sort of security behind it. Now the government, what they're going to want to do in the future, they're going to want you to register all of your addresses under your name with a social security number so the government can sit there and watch your accounts, because now they need to collect their tax revenue. And he's saying the digital dollar is going to be great, because the central bank system, they can see everything that you're doing in your account. They can check your address. They see you're spending money, you're doing this, you're doing that. So this is just another way to take away more economic freedom from Americans. The centralized banking system is a sham. And that's what this is. And they like the idea of being able to, quote unquote, stimulate the economy. It's just another way to sway you how to spend your money. It's taking away more freedom from you, because debasing your currency makes you want to spend your currency much more, because you're not even going to get to experience. You're going to spend your currency and buy things and then hold them and look at that now as a value. Like, I would go buy a couch, let's say. If I knew that my currency was going to debase or I was going to lose all of it within the next couple days, I would go buy a couch, because at least I could try to sell the couch on the street and get my money back. So you're going to find random value in things that you never found value in before, which we're actually kind of seeing because the devaluing of the dollar currently. People are buying like Charizard Pokemon cards for $1 million, first edition. People are buying and selling sports cards as well. It's anything is better than the dollar right now, because the dollar has been inflating at a pretty rapid pace. So a couple quick headlines here. I have the FBI sexual harassment in the workplace. Just the news piece came out. Apparently there's a lot of sexual harassment going on at the FBI. A lot of people messing around, cheating on their wives, cheating on their husbands. I thought that was interesting, because it's supposed to be such an elitist organization in the FBI, and there's supposed to be so much pride and integrity. So once again, I mentioned that Veterans Affairs mandating the COVID vaccination. I have that. That's a Fox News piece. How to get rid of spyware on your iPhone. I thought it was pertinent considering what I mentioned before, as well as this NSO group and the Pegasus technology. If you want to get rid of spyware, most likely it's connected to one of your apps. So there's a couple different ways in which you can do it. Obviously, offload all the apps that you don't use. You'll notice this. You'll notice, especially on an iPhone, you'll be using much more data than you thought you'd be using, and your battery dies a lot quicker. That usually means that there's a spyware technology on your phone, because it's reporting everything that you're doing back to another entity through data, which makes you use more data and also makes you use more battery. So I got that one. And then the very end, I have the Judicial Watch filing for a FOIA request for the OPM hack of 2014. The Office of Personnel Management got hacked in 2014 by China, and they're requesting for a Freedom of Information request. I don't exactly know why they're doing that, but they are. So that'll conclude this one, folks. I greatly appreciate everybody tuning in. As always, please like, share, subscribe, drop the mic, let everybody know about the podcast. Once again, I have no advertising. I've spent like $5 on advertising in my budget all time. So if you can let people know about the podcast, get it out there. I think I provide a pretty solid composition of information here on this show. And yeah, that'll be it. And I will see you guys all on, I got a Federalist paper on Friday, and then I'll see you on the weekend special. Thank you.